With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Greetings, travelers.
Greetings, travelers.
We are here.
Yes. It is. Okay. We're gonna be talking about one of my favorite topics today with one of our favorite people, but we are super excited going into 2025 because I have seen more things than I'd like to talk about on skinwalkers and stuff. I think 2025 is going to be the year of the skinwalker. I'm just throwing that out there.
We've been getting a ton of, you know, listener emails about them and such. And it's like, I think that's a name that likes to get thrown out there because it's the popular, you know, it's the new hotness.
I think I like the name Mimics. I'm going to go with Mimics from now on instead of skinwalkers. But I think until the entire world catches on with what we're going to call them instead of skinwalkers, I might have to say both.
Well, the problem with Mimics is I immediately go Dungeons and Dragons. And
me too! But yeah. Not all of our travelers, we've had to explain that too several times.
True.
We're going to just move forward with this, but more on this because I think this is the year for it.
All right. Anyway, it is also Valentine's Day coming up.
Yes.
So we had to invite one of our dear friends who is an expert on haunted love stories. If you peruse any shelf in Florida and you go to your haunted story sections, you're going to see his books and my books also in fine cracker barrels everywhere. So let's bring on our guest today, the amazing Christopher Balzano. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. And I'll also add every TJ Maxx in the state of Florida as well.
Oh, wow. We're in TJ Maxx now, too.
I remember those lonely days of when I began my writing career being like, if I can only make it to TJ Maxx, I'll have everything I want in life. So
I've gotten a few from Harbor Freight carries us.
Oh, wow. Really?
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yes. I love getting all of those pictures that people send me of my book in the wild.
Yes.
And then I say, push those Mark Muncy ones off to the side.
I always tell everybody, I'll give you a dollar if you move me to the top shelf. So
eye level, put mine eye level. But you know, it's so interesting though how, you know, anyone who has read both of our books, we often cover the same topics.
Yeah, but different ways.
But we have a different approach, right? And yep, I think that's kind of the spirit of the way that we write about ghost stories, about haunted legends. So, and that kind of comes out in everything we're hopefully going to talk about today. So,
yes. Yeah. And before we keep talking about how great you guys are, because I realize now the mistake of redoing this, but one thing I do want to say also about the way you guys write, which is very different than a lot of people in the field. And I think, you know, travelers, listeners, this is something to look at, is does that person actually go do research versus do they Google and put what Wikipedia says into their book? Because not that you can't look at some information, but you can always tell the books that that's all they do. So look up that writer's social media and see if they like to go get spooky like the two gentlemen that are talking today. So before you guys talk about how to move your books around on shelves, because that's not this episode, this is on Haunted Love. Chris, what is your first introduction into Haunted Love?
So I started my podcast, Tripping on Legends, probably about 8 years ago, 8-9 years ago now. And we had our first one was the haunted train station in Venice. And we weren't even a show. We were just two people really into ghosts who went out and did this haunted legend where you're supposed to go there at midnight and you would hear the train coming in. And we started the podcast, right? But kind of based on that. And our idea was we were going to do it totally different than most people were doing it at that time. We were no equipment. We were just going to talk about the legends and try to connect to bigger things. probably about a year and a half into doing these episodes and kind of tracing all of these ghostly legends all throughout Florida and talking about some bigger themes and ideas while we were on our path, we realized that we kept turning to each other and jokingly saying hashtag haunted love. We just were saying it because story after story after story, it seemed that that was the big theme that was coming through. And so many haunted legends trace back to this idea that love is strong enough, you know, powerful enough to make us kind of extend beyond death, right? And then, of course, the snooty analytical brain in me, the folklorist part of me, really had to start looking at, well, why is that? Why is that so? So one of the things that I always say is that to experience the supernatural is not normal, right? It's the paranormal. It's not normal. And when that happens, the majority of people don't go, well, that's great. It's a ghost. Thank you. Instead, they try to rationalize it. They try to make some kind of sense of it. Now imagine an entire community shares some kind of supernatural paranormal experience. And the entire community is trying to rationalize it. You can't say it's not happening. There is not a legend trip that we've done that I don't feel has some kind of origin. And most of them, some kind of supernatural or paranormal origin. So then you have to fall back on, what do I know? What stories do I know that would explain this, that would give me comfort, that would tether me to reality, because I'm dealing with unreality, because this stuff's not supposed to happen. What are the most commonly or easily accessible stories to us? Love stories, right? So it makes sense that two people, if one of them died the day before their wedding, they're going to come back and try to continue that union. Or if a mother loses her children in this one location where there's a bridge, she's going to come back looking for her children time and time again. That relates to us, right? We understand that. That story makes sense to us. And then, of course, you have, you know, there are what, 9,000 hauntings in Florida that all mimic Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? Yeah. We've all read them, and we all read Romeo and Juliet as freshmen, most of us as freshmen in high school. I teach freshmen. I know this. And so while love, most of these places, I'm unsure of whether the backstory that's told in the community is the actual story of what happened or why it's coming back. But we fall back on these love stories because they're so familiar and they make sense, because you think, if that was me, I would come back for my children, or I would come back for the woman I love.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I think is interesting, because I agree with you. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about the level of emotion that would have to be in place energy wise, I think, to keep somebody there, because you're not going to be like Joe Smo, who was whatever, led a plain and simple life, was happy, had a great thing, died well, sticking around, unless like it's sort of protection again of the loved ones. But Most of the time, I feel like a lot of these stories has some very powerful emotion attached to it. And love can be one of the most powerful emotions that exists. I'm not saying it is, but it's one of those ones I think as humans, we get so attached to and can get so enthralled with, and can be the greatest thing we've experienced, or the worst thing on the flip side of the heartbreak that goes with, you know, that not being good. But I agree.
Yeah, I mean, so many of these stories take place. It's like, you know, there's an unrequited love, or there is a love that somehow is broken up. A lot of people get broken up with, and then the person never shows up, right? And they're supposed to be there, and they're delayed for some one reason or another. Think like Immortal Beloved, that whole, you know, if you've seen that old Beethoven movie, I can't believe I have to call it an old Beethoven movie.
Yeah, I know. It's
right, we're talking 30 years ago. But that idea of like life and chance and happenstance, like causing these two people who are supposed to be together to not be together. And that grief, that like explosion of emotion, it makes sense that the person then takes their life. Right. Yeah. So when you see that woman on the ledge and you see her jumping, and everyone's kind of, you know, for a generation, two generations, people have seen this woman at the ledge leaping to her death. It makes sense when you say, oh, wait a minute. I bet you what happened was. And not only is the emotion of that moment maybe imprinted in a paranormal sense, but in a folklore sense, we heard that story, we know that story, and we can relate to it because we've all, I'm sure you guys have never been, I've been broken up with, I've had unrequited love in my lifetime. And so that emotion, that ghost story is just an extreme version of what we actually have felt ourselves at one time.
And the reason it's so common among younger love is because every love when you're young feels like this is the most amazing thing ever. And then it just, you get older, you realize, okay, that was good, but...
You know, I'm a high school teacher. I know I just kind of threw it out there, but I'm a high school teacher. I work with freshmen, and it is amazing to me. And you have to respect it because it's a 100% true emotion. I have a 15-year-old daughter who's a sophomore, and her friends, I'm Mr. B who drives everybody around. Yeah. I understand that intensity, and it makes complete sense that, you know, I never try to minimize that intensity and that emotion that they're feeling because it is the end of the world. When they start dating someone for 2 weeks, it is the greatest love story ever told. And there's no logic that can possibly be like, no, it's not. It is actually the greatest love story ever told, you know?
Yep. And with the hormones and everything else, oh my gosh. Yeah, it's just, it's crazy. Yeah. So, all right. So we've got that. You know, we know that's the basis of some of these, you know, legends, legendary loves and legendary things and all this. We'll jump right into it.
What is the train one? Because you said the train one. And I know you and Mark know the train one, but for me and the travelers out there, so that we could potentially get completely freaked out, what is the train one?
So the story goes that in the town of Venice, Florida, if you go to the Venice Train Depot, which is now, it's a bus depot, but there's like a train museum that's attached to it. If you go to it at exactly midnight on Halloween, you will hear the Ringling Brothers train rolling into the station. And some people have even reported you can smell popcorn. You can hear, and they always seem to say the lion's roaring. That seems to be the primary animal.
Or elephant call. That's the other one.
That intense experience. So the story goes that, and by the way, none of these details actually make sense, but don't tell the people of Venice that, right? That Ringling had decided to winter in that area, which is 100% true. And so he would be rolling into that station on Halloween night at exactly midnight. And at first, the people of the town, people of Sarasota, Venice, they didn't want, who wants carnies in their town, right? And so John Ringling decided that he was going to win them over in this stroke of genius by only paying his employees in $2 bills, right? And that way, at the end of the night, all of these merchants would go into their drawer, they'd see all these $2 bills, and they knew that John Ringling had brought commerce to the town, right? And so it was good to have them. And so the story goes, over the years, it only took a few years to catch on. By the time, you know, they're in their fifth year, people love that they're coming in for the winter, right? It means, like, you know, that the businesses are going to go up. And so our idea was, we're going to go to the location, we're going to go there at exactly midnight, and we're going to put a $2 bill on the track. Right? We like to have some kind of spark, something kind of going on.
Yeah.
It happened to be, like I said, we weren't a show yet. It was just me, my girlfriend and I, you know, and it was a strange, weird convergence of things that happened that we both didn't have our kids on Halloween. And so I had wanted to do this for a few years. I decided, like, okay, we're going to do it. And then the teacher brain in me kind of kicked in. And I'm like, okay, so if I go to Venice at midnight, I'm not out of there till 1, an hour home, and I've got to go home, you know, I've got to go to school and teach all those candy hopped up kids. And so I'm not going to do it. And so we have another saying on the show, even though the co-host isn't there anymore, called hashtag follow the signs. I am I'm doing a middle school dance. I was teaching middle school at that time, and I'm doing the concessions. and a kid walks up to pay for his food with three $2 bills. When was the last time you saw a $2 bill like handed in the act of commerce by an 11-year-old, right, to the guy? So we did hashtag follow the signs. We went there that night. We put the $2 bills on the track, and at exactly midnight, the time that, you know, the Venice tells that the story happens, but also it's a reflection of their acceptance, all hyped up, all excited. We did a Facebook Live, and we heard train whistles that first night. No popcorn, unfortunately, but we heard a train whistle that first night, and we were totally hooked on that this is what we should be doing. Because it was this perfect example of the hiccup, the recording, the echo of this true love that was happening between a community and an outsider who was coming in, winning them over. Yeah. And the crazy thing is, I have to get back there, maybe hopefully next Halloween, because for the first time ever, there are actual Ringling train truck cars in that station now. Yeah, I'm hoping that the juice is even more intense.
That's pretty cool.
That is very, very cool. So now, Mark and Chris, you can go on from there, because I had no idea about that story. And if you said carnies, like the hair, I could feel the hair on my body start to think it had to go up and get creeped out. And then it was like, Nick, because that's one of my favorite seasons of American Horror Story is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, hands down,
based on Ringling moving to Florida and the whole, you know, carnival atmosphere down there and everything, and the town of Gibsonton.
Their entire towns now that their identity is this kind of, you know, here's where the good folks came and settled, and aren't they just the best citizens of Florida? And of course, in the hodgepodge that is the weirdness of Florida, yes, carnival people are amazing citizens. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Fun stuff. Okay. So now let's go classic romance story. Give me one of your favorites from your book. You know, what was one that kind of started, you thought was going to go classic romance, and then maybe had a little, nice little twist to it?
Wow. I think if you're talking like classic romance that has a twist, I always talk about Arbuckle Creek.
Oh, there
because
we go.
It's to me the perfect example of a ghostly legend trying to explain away a really bad situation that is much more complex. And yet the woman is still on the bridge. So the story goes that in Arbuckle Creek, I always say it's the worst name in Florida. It's Lorida, Florida. Yeah. I know it's pronounced Lorida, but it's spelled Lorida, Florida. And actually when I published the book, Dr. Brandy Stark messaged me and she said, I enjoyed the book, but you know, you misspelled Florida for an entire chapter. And I'm like, no, that's the name of the town. It's Lorida, Florida. So there's this bridge that goes into the town, which is pretty much a ghost town now, that has the story that there's an old woman on the bridge. So it dates back to the 1940s where supposedly a man desperate for love commissioned the local herbalist, to make him a love potion. And she said, come back on the next full moon. He went there, and when he tried to pay her for the love potion, she said, no. I want your firstborn child. They got into a fight. He ends up throwing her off the bridge into the water, where she gets impaled on a banyan tree, or some kind of tree, which is in the water. He weighs the body down and he takes off. Right? The townspeople find the body, and she was a respected citizen, right? Like I always say, if you're talking about your eternal soul, religion is good. If you want that rash off your butt, you go to the local witch, right? Because she's dealing with the everyday things. They can't admit, and I know, Mark, you talk about this a lot, about that guilt of having offended God by actually entertaining this, right?
The outsider.
Yeah. Exactly. And so they can't bury her in the cemetery, so they bury her under a willow tree because that seems kind of witchy. Almost immediately, her ghost is starting to be seen on the bridge. And sometimes she'll be in the middle of the road. People drive through it. Classic hitchhiker legend kind of stuff. Sometimes she'll just be on the edge, like giving them an acting, you know, an accusing finger. And so what happens, in addition to this, the town starts to fail. Businesses are closing, young people are leaving, and the town is kind of in this crisis, and they assume they've either offended God or they've offended the witch. They decide maybe the best way to deal with this on both sides, they dig up her body and they bury her in the next town over. It'll be their problem now. Doesn't work. She continues to be seen. The town's continuing to fail. They dig up her body again. They burn her and then spread her ashes in the next county. Let it be their problem, right? Doesn't help. She's still seen to this day, and the town completely fails.
Yeah.
Now, to this day, people are still seeing it. We went to that location, and we didn't see the witch. We made a love potion, by the way, to do it.
Oh, nice.
We didn't see the witch, but we saw the other ghost that's there. Because you were talking about, you know, are you just stopping at Wikipedia, right? As we started to do more research and we started to talk to people, they would say to us, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never seen a witch on that bridge. I drive there every night. But I've gone and launched my boat from that boat ramp. And every time I do, I hear the giggling of a little kid. And sometimes I've literally seen a little kid detach my boat. And then he scampers off under the bridge and I go like kind of running after him and he's gone. Or I had people who were local saying, we love fishing off that bridge, except for that damn little kid. He's always pulling our poles down. He's always messing with our fish. And then he giggles and runs under the bridge. And we've even heard a man yelling at him. And the story all of a sudden became more complex because it seemed as if maybe that little boy, maybe that firstborn child and the man who committed the murder are stuck at the bridge.
Yeah.
But the real story of Lareda, Florida has nothing to do with a witch, right?
Yeah,
it has to do with the fact that it's a small town. The trains shifted, right? And in addition to that, World War II happened. And all of those young people started to leave. Some of them died during the war. But then others were like, why would I ever go back to Lareda, Florida?
Mosquito and, hell.
Right, exactly. And so people just left. Yeah. Also, it's... You know, they founded the town on Lake Istopoka, which in Seminole means place where people die. Because that lake has a crazy riptide. And for years, for generations, the Seminoles were talking about how they would be on there and a canoe would just mysteriously disappear.
Yep.
So you take all of these elements and all of them are a great ghost story with an explanation why. And yet... that old woman and that little boy are still on that bridge. And what's the story that kind of pulsates through that? The love story. We connect to the love story and then all the other stuff just becomes, you know, the icing on the cake.
You know, what's interesting is I often talk about cosplaying ghosts, right? Because the fact of the matter is that, you know, people see Elvis everywhere, right? You know, right. And more than likely to me, he would be a Graceland with everything we know. How's death happen? Like he'd be a Graceland, right? But they see him everywhere. You know, he's seen in Vegas. He's seen, you know, all of these places. And so I often, you know, you're talking about this, you know, the series of entities. Part of me goes, is it the same one, right? Is there something linked to that firstborn child where that particular entity goes between the man, the boy, and the witch, you know, like.
I always say, you know, my friend Jeff Belanger always says, a place is haunted by the most famous person that ever went there.
Yeah.
Which is why we have the ghost of Johnny Appleseed everywhere and George Washington. And it's hilarious because I do a haunted history tour in downtown Fort Myers and people are convinced that Al Capone stayed in this one hotel.
Yep.
Al Capone. And there was a drive-by shooting. I'm like, a drive-by? No. Like, but there are, you know, you have to be, if you're a hotel, you have to have housed Al Capone at one time. And I'm like, that guy was in every single hotel. Even if the hotel wasn't built when he was around, he's still there, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's part of our fascination with celebrity. And if it's Al Capone, we can now put a name to, you know, a name to the story. And it, but the fact of them, I think more often than not, you take a location. And if we believe that ghosts can be intelligent, right. and they have any control over themselves and their environment, where are you going to hang out? Are you going to hang out in that cemetery deep in the Ocala National Forest that no one can ever find? Or are you going to go to the bridge leading into Oviedo where the Oviedo lights are seen and people are there all the time looking for ghosts? And so I often think that a lot of these haunted locations, they become famous kind of in the ghost world, and spirits find their way because they know people are looking for them and they can connect and contact and whatever we feel ghosts might do at that location. And so, you know, we have the strange pictures and evidence people produce from these locations, and it's supposed to be an old woman who walks down the hallway, and yet there seems to be a young man who's just kind of standing in the corner, and you clearly have a picture and you want to know, there's got to be some kind of story, and you connect the two when really maybe it's just a lonesome spirit finding its way to a place where people are looking.
Yeah, no, that's, I have a whole thing on that, because you also hear stories from people saying they saw the same thing in a place, right? Totally get it. Me and Mark talk about, you know, what we call stone tape ghosts, which are the ones that are kind of on like repeat doing the same action over and over again. But then you have people that go to a place and they see many different things, like what their evil is different for, you know, or scare factor. So
it's more a reflection of themselves than it is of the actual spirit. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so that makes you wonder, like, okay, you're expecting to see this as a spirit, like, oh, this one wants to see blah, you know, let me get on my Al Capone suit.
Well, I'm not saying that either of you guys have ever spent any time on a dating website.
Oh,
but I will tell you, during those initial interactions, it's like, oh, of course, I love Grey's Anatomy. Oh my word, you were wearing that shirt in one of your pictures. Do you love that band? Oh my word, I listen to Nickelback all the time, right?
Yeah.
Like, we as people become what the people who we're looking to attract want us to be. Yeah. So wouldn't it seem just logical that a spirit might try to present itself as the thing that's going to get you hyped up or get you interested or raise interest in other people? So I can totally see, not that I would ever lie on my dating profiles, but I understand.
Nobody ever lies on dating profiles, and all of the photos are current.
Exactly.
Yeah. And everybody says exactly how much they make on all their LinkedIn and Facebook profiles 100%. So now one of the other things I think also is with these things is we go, you know, to the tulpa theory, that some of these things there's so many people going there looking for this one specific thing. So it kind of creates that one specific thing. So that's another, lean into this. So,
and I think that happens a lot, especially when it comes to witches stories. You know, when I first started, and that Arbuckle Creek, I think, might have been the first real witch story. And it seemed as if there were no witches. Of course, I'm from Massachusetts, right? Like, we went to Salem every other year for a field trip. We know witches. What does Florida know about witches? And it seems like more places that I go, those stories come out. And I think a lot of it has to do with they're the perfect villain. Mm. And so we go there with the intent that that's what it is. And so we see and we create that representation of what a witch might be in a lot of these locations in Florida now.
Yeah. We got Hog Island, and then we got Blackwater Hattie, who was, you know, that was a fun one that.
So
I think the song and all that. And we find out, talk to the guy who wrote the song, and he's like, yeah, no, I made it up.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Hog Island is a really good representation of that, because I've actually now talked to people in that trailer park and in that RV park, and they describe someone who looks very much like a witch, right? And of course, you know, you have this backstory and of a witch being, you know, caught and hung and burned, and it's a very clear cut case of like, oh, well, that makes sense then that we would see this witch. And people describe seeing someone tall, thin, long black cloak, clearly white woman. And yet the ghost in that area, what's really haunting that little swamp has nothing to do with a witch because through no local newspapers, but at least a dozen newspapers from other parts of the country, very clearly, African-American man commits an assault. They bring him out to the exact location where that noose was. Yep. They hang the two men. They light them on fire. And so the ghost that's there, whatever's actually haunting that location, is probably the spirit of these men who were lynched and murdered, right? And yet people are visually seeing a witch because they're going there time and time again trying to find that witch. And so I do believe, yes, that's much more of this tulpa that's kind of on top of this darker, and by darker I mean like dark part of our history, which is playing itself out in that location.
I agree. And with that, we have to hear from our sponsors, but we will be right back.
Prepare to be devoured. The Wolves of Wharton is a 6-part complete book series by Eerie Travels producer Bo Lake. It has been called dark and visceral, steamy, dramatic, and a fresh take on the werewolf mythos. If you like action, adventure, a large serving of body horror, and some steamy relations, the Wolves of Wharton series is for you. Pick it up wherever books are sold or at linktree.com/bow_lake.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're back. And everything you guys just said still lends to my cosplaying ghost theory. Because the other thing, I don't feel like souls, spirits, cookies, whatever you call what we believe separates us a lot of times from animals, right? Is I look at that and I don't think that has necessarily like an age or gender identity, you know? Our producer's like, why do you call them cookies? Because that's actually what they're called over in the UK. That's a term for it. You know, because Bo, me and you don't write dark things where people die all the time. So knowing every single word for a soul is not important. But I think that if you think about that aspect, right, that our whatever thing is not, you know, it doesn't age the way we age, whatever, it's just a presence, then you can identify as anything you want to be. And if you happen to believe that you live multiple lives, which a lot of different belief systems and stuff like that think. And I happen to be one of those. So I believe in reincarnation, for using the term for it. That means we have many identities that we could assume. So I think it's interesting that we try to sort of impose our physical limitations on something that doesn't necessarily have a physical form.
Yeah, like I always like it when someone is trying to talk about the physics of a Ouija board and they're trying to disprove ghosts based on Ouija boards, right? And they say, well, it could just be the person's mind making it move. I'm like, oh, okay, so now our minds can control objects, but there's no such thing as ghosts? Trying to explain away the paranormal by using the supernatural, or the supernatural using the paranormal. Yeah. Not a good argument for you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You know, you guys were talking about the stone tape theory, and it's really interesting. I was mentioning that woman who her lover is late to meeting her. That's actually that story is many places, but one of the places it's at is this, known as the Assonet Ledge, which is in East Freetown, Massachusetts, which is like my very first book was on that location. It's part of this bigger thing known as the Bridgewater Triangle. And for several decades, it was an active quarry. And the crazy thing is that I'm not sure who this woman is. We're never able to identify her. It's just a story that has persevered. But if you track, for anyone who is, you know, lives in New England and you know the Breakers, which are, you know, in Newport, Rhode Island, like where all the richest people live, and, you know, the Vanderbilts and all those people, they built all of these, you know, houses right on the water. Every location where one of those mansions uses the rock that came from the Freetown Quarry, the Assonet Quarry, are also haunted with a very similar looking woman. And there is this place known as Fort Adams, which is also in Rhode Island, that was primarily built with stone quarried from this haunted location. And they also, even though it doesn't make sense because it was a military base, have this woman dressed almost the same way who wanders the hall. So it's really this combination of this material was sent out. She may have been trapped in that. And so her love is playing itself out in all of these different crazy locations. And of course, that's what we see when we see her. And people then make up their own stories as to why this woman kind of wanders the halls at these different locations. She was, you know, the maid and they were having an affair, or she dressed up as a man and snuck into the base because her boyfriend or her husband was in prison there and they caught her and then dressed her up in a dress before they executed her for treason. And it's like, that's the same woman, man. Like, you just made up five stories about a ghost that's traveling because of a potentially, you know, scientific explanation for the paranormal. And so I always love to see that kind of thing happen in multiple places.
Yeah, well, that's my whole Woman in White, who's one of my favorite things, right? One of our early episodes, we talked about her and the Hat Man, right? Because the Woman in White has that same usually lost love, children, whatever, attached to her. And they always go, oh, that's blah, except for this, whatever this is, functions the same way everywhere it goes. It's a female, usually in a white dress with long, straight black hair. And this is cultures across the world, right? And I'm not saying skin tone. I'm just saying what this person generally looks like and is walking near water, across from water, near water, is wet when they're walking, you know what I mean? And they always attribute this thing to some person in their town who lost their husband or their kids or, you know, missed their wedding because they were killed by a horse. I don't know.
But and so in Florida, you have Rolling Acres, right? Which has Julia. And it's the same kind of thing. But it's one of those situations where people have reported her for so many years and the story of Julia changes, right? It always usually involves a love triangle, but it's like the boyfriend went off to war and he came back and she was cheating on him, right? Or, you know, the boyfriend went off to war. She was forced to marry someone else. She goes there and commits suicide. And it's all of these different backstories. And the interesting part about that is that entire community or that area of that community, which is haunted, whenever they experience a ghost, no matter what it is, if something falls off the shelf, they go, oh, it was Julia.
Julia. Yeah.
So not only is she this woman in white walking because of all this death, she also is in your house messing up your quiche, right? Like, and she gets blamed for everything. And the real true who Julia might be probably has nothing to do with that. And my theory is that it's actually a murder victim from Florida's most notorious serial killer, most prolific, Gerard Schaefer, who killed two women and I believe buried them on Rolling Acres when it was still all just woods. And I think one of those women is Julia who's walking. And yet we can't prove any of that. We can't look at, and no. It's much more comfortable because she's in white to give her that classic romantic background.
Right. Yeah, Schaefer, again, one of those notorious cases, the Devil's Tree and all that is all attributed to him and everything. And it's true, partially, but also.
Yeah,
the once, guy gets a lot of credit. But
and once again, you have to look at like, okay, so what should a good researcher do? Because as I'm doing something else, I'm doing Schaefer research, and I find that these two women were abducted from not too far away from there, and Schaefer would never kill where he abducted. He would always take him, like to take in pairs, and this location was not far from where he had abducted these two women. I think it was 1966. But more importantly, in doing that research, I find this random picture of a boat from Lady Lake, essentially dredging Lady Lake and searching Lady Lake because they believe, for whatever reason, I was never able to find that reason, that those women had been dumped in the actual Lady Lake, right? Like, you know, and yeah. So all of a sudden it was like, wait a minute, all these things started to click. And I was like, what if that ghost is not some, you know, distraught lover, but a murder victim whose body will never be found because in the last 30, 40 years, they've developed that and someone missed the bones in digging? Yeah. Or great tradition in Florida, those bones are there and we just kind of push them off to the side and pretend that they're not there, right? Because for the sake of development, especially when you consider, you know, the peak of development of that town, for all the sake of the villages,
yeah,
it makes sense that there might be someone there that's not that. And of course, Julia's not saying, no, wait, I didn't love anybody. I was murdered, right? And because in a situation like that, those bones will probably never be found. I don't think the stories of Julia are ever going to stop.
Yeah. No, the villages we were talking about, Cow Prairie Cemetery, that they were just going to move and just shuffle it aside. Nobody cared.
Yeah, you know.
But then, wow, it turned into, oh my gosh, there's more bodies here than we thought. It's more history than we thought. There might be Native American burial ground there. And
it's, you know, when I was first approached about that, it was as a result of the Hog Island witch story. And I was told, you're an idiot. You're in the wrong place. You're calling it wrong. And so I started doing all this research on that abandoned, forgotten town, Pemberton Ferry, which is crazy because you can talk to people who are now old, who were teenagers when it stopped being Pemberton Ferry. They have no memory of it whatsoever.
No. They might remember Croom, but right. They won't remember...
Right, which is not that at all. I mean, they're completely different things. And so there was... So the same woman, she said to me that... you know, the villages are buying up all of this property. Now, no way we can get into this in the amount of time we have.
We have to do a whole episode on this.
I truly believe the villages is a way to bring about the end of the world. And I'm not joking when I say that. I truly believe that in all the research that I've done. We'll have to do a whole episode on that. But hey,
that's Erica. Mark, so, Bo, put that on the clackety clack.
And I've got proof. I've got evidence.
Oh, so, man. All right, I'm in.
So they're buying all this property up with all of these, like, you know, parent companies and, like, shell companies, corporations and all that stuff like that. And it wasn't until we started publicizing the value of this cemetery that we were able to save it. We were able to get it kind of protected. Now, like you said, Mark, not only – are there many more bodies than are currently there? Like they did the gas tests and all that stuff. Yeah. And they found all these other bodies. We found all these references to Native Americans, but then we also found these references when they were building the National Cemetery, which abuts really Cow Prairie, that very clearly the Seminoles at that time were saying, here's the line you need to stop at because this is considered a sacred land. And I've tried for years. I've talked to pretty much every Native American I know, and I've been unable to penetrate, well, what was sacred about it? What was the history of it before that?
Yeah.
But still an extremely haunted location. And more importantly, it has the worst curse that you can possibly imagine, because if you kiss a person in that cemetery, you will marry them and live happily ever after. And who wants love? That's the ultimate curse, right? Now, I'll tell you, I've kissed two women in that cemetery and I'm still single. So I'm not sure just how effective. I guess maybe you have to, you know, I don't know. But
what's the other one? The tree that grows into the other tree in St. Augustine, the Lover's Tree, which is right next to Tolomato Cemetery. And it's every tour will take you there and say, oh, if you kiss under this tree, see these two trees have grown together. It happens. It happens in nature. Right. It does that. It has nothing to do with anything. It's just a cool thing to get people to kiss on your walking tour.
And it's interesting because they also have that if you kiss somebody in the shadow, it has to be the shadow of Hully Tower at Stetson University. It's the same kind of thing, right? In addition to if you rub the base, you're going to pass your test as well. You know, like we want these things to be true, especially because it's an initiation kind of thing. And like you said, what's better than on a tour, like getting two people to kiss underneath the tree or in the cemetery or something like that?
Yeah. Well, we say so much. It's all about intention, right? So what do you believe? What do you put power behind? What do you think's going to happen? And it's so funny because you go, okay, but do you have to be wearing certain clothing? Do you have to be facing a certain direction? Right. Where exactly are you supposed to stand? Is it on a particular night that this, you know, it's kind of like, okay, but what were the rules put in place about this brilliant plan when this?
Right. How did you figure them out? How did you figure out that, oh, it only happens here when you do this? By the way, in that story about the train station, it never says whether it's October 31st going into the 1st or whether it's October 30th going into the 31st, right? Like we naturally assume it's the midnight of the night of Halloween. You know, it's interesting. One of the books that I'm working on, it's kind of like an ongoing project, is called Whistling Past the Cemetery, which is a play on the old whistling past, you know, don't whistle past a graveyard. And they're all rituals, if you will, that you have to do in different cemeteries all across the world. And if you do the ritual, or if you go on the right night, or if you, you know, walk the right path up someplace, then you're going to see this ghost, or you're going to have this experience, or you'll be able to sell your soul to the devil, or you'll be able to, you know, it's really, I feel, the rules and the procedure and the rituals are us trying to put some kind of block on chaos, right? On things we can't control, right? Yeah. It's like, you will not, you know, if it's different. If you wake up, this is why I'm not a paranormal investigator anymore. If you wake up and there's a ghost in your house and you freak out and you call an investigator, that's a situation. If you're talking about something that's been going on for decades to a community, you have no control over any of that. So what's the best way to get control? A, to write the story yourself, but B, to say, unless you make a love potion, you will not see that witch at Arbuckle Creek, right? Or unless you do this, that ghost is not going to happen. Unless you go to the, unless you go to Dunellen Road, right? Or you know, Tiger Tail Road and click your light three times, you are not going to see those black-eyed kids. It's our way of putting order into this chaotic, you know, not fully understood world that is the paranormal.
Well, you know, you said that, and what I immediately thought of, and since starting this with Mark, I've gone all kinds of directions. But one of the things I think is interesting is if you look at shamans, witches, medicine people, the sages of the villages, right? Before a lot of religion, and I'm going to say honestly, like Christian religion kind of trumped across some of that stuff, was handed down knowledge, even, you know what I mean, through time of what they had noticed as a pattern. It's kind of like, don't eat, you know, these berries, whatever. And it's learned knowledge. It's kind of like the whole, like, why they, you know, didn't eat pork, you know, Jewish people. Well, that's because it gave them tryptophan poisoning or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, they found that just didn't work at the time, the way meat was handled and stuff, but that's carried forward. And I think that's true with some of this stuff, like don't whistle past the graveyard. Well, when people used to bury people, was there a situation of something, and I'm going to say preternatural something, like, because we've talked about fear mongers and stuff, that seems to trigger that they get your attention and then you have unfortunate situations. Then the rule survival wise becomes don't do this. And we've turned it into the legend this, legend that. But a lot of this stuff was don't do this because there was some survival thing that failed if you did this activity.
or a success thing. It's the NFL play. It's the, you know, NFL playoffs. I haven't changed my underwear in 3 weeks. I'm kidding, because I don't have a team you know, it's that idea, and I think we do that on a daily basis. It's how we learn, and I think those paranormal triggers, those ghostly rituals we do are 100% just an extension
ritual.
Of that.
It's 100% ritual.
Yeah, it's like it worked this time, and so I'm going to continue doing that time and time again.
And that goes back to one of our recent episodes we did on Hans Holzer. He talks about there were cases where people were faking evidence because they were so wanting to be validated.
Right.
But that was also triggering things by them faking it. So it was, they were invoking a ritual to summon this thing by faking it. And that, you know, and so he started getting into that whole tangent of that. And people are like, oh, you're just justifying people faking these. Like, no, it's, they needed the belief. That needed the energy. That's the spark. That's the fire. And now we've got the flame. Yeah.
So not haunted love, but you know, we did an episode this week of our show about great video game ghosts and hauntings and curses, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that came up time and time again, even with my 15, 16-year-olds who would never admit to it, was Herobrine from Minecraft, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And so these people actually genuinely believe, we made our own conjuring temple to Herobrine the way that they say you're supposed to make it. Was this a real ghost? Was it a glitch in the system? Because you have an entire now generation of kids. All my kids knew it. My kids knew it. My students knew it. People online who wouldn't admit that they were playing Minecraft at 30 were speaking out about it, right? And so, you know, they were saying, you know, this was a glitch in the system. It was a lie. It was a false, you know, post, all that stuff like that. And yet there still was this idea that the ceremonial part of it was actually raising. Now, we had talked about Herobrine so much that he had actually somehow gotten into literally a ghost in the machine. Yep. But here's the crazy thing. As I was posting things about my intent to build this shrine in a half-joking way, but more as a celebration of the legend trip that these people were doing, you know, on their computer making it, the number of people I have who are witches, who are shaman, who are people who work with ceremony, who told me, do not build that temple. Yep. Do not build that shrine. And no matter what you do, don't light those candles and talk about summoning him, because you are potentially unlocking something in your house. Now, during the episode when they randomly went out, yes, my daughter and I are completely freaked out by it and everything like that. And yet it's that same idea that, you know, if we are putting out intent into the universe, which is fully why I feel that my legend trips, even when they are not, they don't produce what the community says, they're always successful because something happens and there's that moment where you're like, I can't reproduce this for you in a lab, and I have no desire to, but there's something here and we're feeling it. And I think a lot of it has to do with the intent that we go out with, which is, I want to understand why this story is successful.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when people are saying that, the other thing that, and we talk about this, we just talked about sort of cosplaying ghosts and what people expect to see. So that's what they do see, right? Or it chooses something that would affect that person and not everybody standing there. But we are, you know, you talked about that, is we don't understand how this stuff works. Like, you know, Mark and Carrie have this situation where they have a thing in their house that moves books around, right? They set up a camera even to try to catch this thing on camera. And it's very much like 1 second the book's there, the next second, or 1 second it's not, the next second it's there. There's no movement. You don't see the book go flying. It just appears on the carpeting, right? That's a whole other thing. But you just...
At eye level?
No. We had to angle the camera down to catch it.
I'm with you.
Yeah. But the thing that's interesting to me about that is we don't understand how that works. we don't understand. Is that dimension shifting? Is it an ability they have? So when you go and you intend to summon things, right? I feel like this is something, if you don't understand how to do that in a way, you can kind of the Ouija board thing. Like, I get Ouija boards, but there's a lot of intention put to open something to talk. And you know, who are we talking to? I'm talking to Bob. The heck you're talking to Bob, right? That could be anything. And yeah. It could lie and go, you know, how many stories of Fae are tricksters, right? So whatever you pull out of wherever you're pulling it from when you do stuff like that, you know, I get why witches go, this is a very bad plan, or any sort of sage type person is, you're not, don't know how to control this gateway. You're going to open it and the thing's going to go, I'm the Minecraft ghost. And no, that's not right. What that is at all, that you just invited into wherever.
It's a supernatural catfishing.
Exactly. Yes. That's our next t-shirt. Supernatural catfishing.
Catfishing. All right. Axolotl, get on it.
Come on. You know, and I think, and one of the things I think, if I feel, backs that up, and that Hog Island story is a really good example of it, is that when we go to these locations sometimes, and because our intent is pure, and we try to be non-biased in what will happen. So Stetson University is another really good example of a haunted love story, where the Hullies are supposed to walk hand in hand, you know, near Hully Tower, just as the sun is coming up and dawn. Very beautiful love story. Sometimes they're walking the dog, sometimes they're not. We have no idea why that is. And yet when we were there in that moment and we were open to whatever might be there, we had a much greater impression, and we experienced an echo, if you will, of kids going to class. And so there was definitely something paranormal going on in the exact location that people say they see these people holding hands walking. Yet maybe because we were open, we didn't see the Hullies holding hands walking. Instead, we saw very clearly this reverse negative image of people who seemed to be walking to class. And the only thing that stopped it from being a, you know, a residual haunting was the fact that they seemed to acknowledge that we were there and even shift their attention to us. So location, definitely haunted, love story attached to it, maybe because we want a love story, and they're the most famous people in that location. I mean, it's literally, they're buried right there. And yet what our legend trip experience was there was entirely different than the couple.
Exactly. And I think it's interesting because I feel like you go with the intention to go, let me just experience this place, right? You're not going, hey, Black Caddy, are you here? Like, you're going in it. But I think a lot of people now, especially that do, you know, ghost haunts and things like that, you go to tell the story of a hotel, for instance, that's the story they know now, right? And so whatever happened there, but you could go, Bob's here, and they're now going to think Bob's there. And then that pervades. And so then people show up looking for Bob. So I think, you know, you take away from this that there are so many great stories and we love legends and stories, but you have to go into things going, I'm here to experience whatever is here, and not go, I need to see Bob the Soldier.
Yeah, you know, or not, right? Or like the idea of my perspective for the last 10 years has been embrace all of that. Embrace that it might be Bob. Embrace that it might not be Bob. Like, you need to respect the fact that that community is saying this, your experience is this. And then, which is what we try to do on the show, is we present it to people and you let them not make a decision what's the true story. So I'm on the tour last night and someone says to me, are these true stories? And I'm like, hey, listen, I'm going to tell you what people experience. I'm going to tell the history. Those two things are smashing up against each other. You believe what you want to believe. Just have a great time.
Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, you know, or all of it's true.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Like,
history's written by winners, but sometimes the winners were right.
Right. Yeah, there you go. So I love the idea of, you know, my intent is always to record, but we often do go to them with open-mindedness And yet the ritual that we do, or the legend trip part of it, where we are supposed to be saying, you know, many lights come out tonight three times. We have something in our mind of what that is. We just try not to make it the overwhelming push of it. And then we're open to whatever might happen.
I love that. And I love that you said it that way. So travelers, when you're out in adventuring, we've talked about a few places. So let's do a recap of where you can travel to, starting with Chris. If they would love to come get a ghost tour, how do they do that with you?
First of all, it's a haunted history tour. Very clear on that. I do the
means ghosts, Chris. I said the right words.
The owner, it's funny because the owner is so, she's, first of all, she's a scaredy cat. This is in downtown Fort Myers, is where I run it. And you can go to truetours.net if you're in the area or you're traveling to the area. But she is so, she's a historian. And has been working with the historical societies, you know, since the late 90s or the mid 90s. And so she's very clear that, you know, the history is what it is and the ghosts are. And I'm like, hun, loosen up, sister. People ain't just coming to hear the story of Harvey Heitman, man. They want to see that dude walking down the hallway. So she is very clear on always calling it a haunted history tour and not a ghost tour. Because we cannot guarantee the ghosts. So downtown Fort Myers, Florida. So if you're in the area, Lee County, Collier County, Hendry County, all those places, Charlotte County, it's not too far away. And it's a really interesting trek through, you know, I mean, we go to at least a dozen different locations. And just last night, someone got an amazing picture of a little boy at the old school in Fort Myers. So it's one of those places where weird things are going on. And if not, it's just a really good place to hear ghost stories.
I love that. And then let's talk about some of the locations you guys have talked about and where people can maybe go see things. So if they wanted to go see our favorite Hog Island witch, where do they go for that?
The Hog Island campground. So you know, I always...
North of Burksville.
Yeah. Well, no.
No.
It's not even
right.
The same county, brother.
Yeah.
That's a whole episode unto itself as well. So I always love it when someone shows me either Haunted Love or the Ocala National Forest book, and they say there's little X's on the chapters where places they've been. Yeah. So those books, and I think Mark's books are really good guidebooks if you want like a complete picture. And I always say, I'm cheap. I don't have any money. And so mine are all places you can go without having to pay like for food or for like to spend the night, maybe just a park fee. So definitely I would say, you know, Hog Island Campground is great. Arbuckle Creek, you could just, if you just look at it, it's very clear where the bridge crosses Arbuckle Creek. Any of these locations, whether you go to my website, you know, trippingonlegends.com and check up some of these stories, it's very clear where they are. And they are, for the most part, accessible. We don't go places as well that you can't go that, you know, you're trespassing or it's illegal or anything like that. So, you know, I would say just go to the website and you will find very easily how to get to these locations. The only tricky one is Coker, because that is technically trespassing, but it's really easy to find. You just have to trust that it's there. Take a leap of faith.
Yep. Oh, I love that. Cemetery.
The only thing there is don't go after dark, because it is technically closes at sunset. But that's,
right.
Yeah,
right,
a lot of these places close at sunset. But if you ask permission, usually you're pretty good. And you know, as long as you're taking only pictures, most places are okay.
Yeah, and what I find is that when I then get in trouble, like when we did Bloody Bucket Bridge one time in Wachula, the cops were like, what the hell are you doing here? And then they sat and talked with us for like an hour about the stories they had heard. So if you are, you talk about intent with the living too. If you're cool and you approach people and you ask them, most people, even if they dismiss the paranormal, will at least be able to tell you what other people are saying or things that they've experienced. So always go out there with a nice smile and be nice to cops.
Oh, I agree. And be honest. Like, if you're there and you're there to do something, just admit it. If they say to leave, leave. Because that is one of the things I just want to throw. Like, we're going to have a link to everything, Chris, so you guys can see it in the show notes. And, you know, when you're taking Mark's books, also keep in mind the time frame these books were written in, and you could encounter something where it's changed and it's no longer open. And if it says no trespassing, listen to it. If it's owned by somebody, contact them before you go. don't assume you have the right to be there if it's not a public place, and follow the rules. But with that said, you have the opportunity to see all these things. It's just do it in smartly. Well, I love the stories that you shared today, Chris. This has been a lot of fun. Much. Love having you on.
And all these locations, go during the day first to get the geography.
Yes.
And then understand it in the context of the legend. So if it says to go at dusk, go at dusk. If it says to go at midnight, go at midnight. But always go there in the daytime first, because A, you can encounter people to talk to that might know something about it. And B, you get the geography of it. So, you know, when you see that weird tree in the middle of the night, you understand it's a weird tree and not, you know, a demon coming to eat your soul.
Yeah.
I hate it when that happens, literally.
Right?
Yeah.
You know how many times I've had my soul eaten?
Well, Chris, thank you for being here as always. And Mark, I think it's time for you to give us some of your sage advice.
Well, no, I just want to thank our listeners as always. And thanks, Chris, for coming on. Always a pleasure. And you can find our books, like I said, at Fine Cracker Barrels, TJ Maxx's, and Harbor Freight's all over Florida and beyond. But thanks again, Chris, for coming. This was amazing. Perfect Valentine's
Day. Thank you very much for having me on, guys.
Yeah, perfect Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
Listeners, again, travelers, travel safely. Always, like I said, travel ahead. Plan your trips accordingly. Make contact with the places that you want to go to make sure it's okay to come visit on this specific night. Because sometimes they have tours. Sometimes they have things that are sold out and you can't quite make it and all that. So always plan ahead for these things. Don't just do it spur of the moment unless you're following the signs. If something has told you to go, you know, maybe it's time to make that trip and make that little legend trip out there and all that. And with that, y'all just be safe. Have a happy Valentine's Day. And when you're out there in the woods and you see that lady in white and she's jumping off the bridge, don't go jumping after her. Just document it, take the notes, and then wonder, was that really a lady in white? Or maybe it was old Bob that decided to dress up in the white sheet and jump off the bridge too. But either way, document, 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 and we will see you on the other side.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.